Hey guys, it's Caitlin, and that shake was my dog Delilah. We are the only hosts today. That's not totally true. We are the only intro hosts today because Nina is literally out there climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, which, like, same. No, but I did go on a run today, so basically same, same, but different. I'm like, maybe I'll go on a hike this weekend. Maybe I will. I might go upstate. Who knows? TBD. Lila just burped. I don't think I've ever heard her burp before. And then she just winked at me. That was interesting. Okay. Anyways, this intro is going to be really short since Nina's not here. Up top, first thing, I do want to give a trigger warning that this episode contains discussion of sexual assault. Unfortunately, that is part of Emily's story and part of what's inspired her to make some of the art she's created and the short films that we do discuss in the interview. But I just wanted to let all the listeners know up top so that no one's caught off guard. And obviously, we're super appreciative of Emily for coming on and being so vulnerable with us. And I'm always a huge proponent, and I'm sure Nina is too. It's hard not to be, of turning pain into art and just vulnerability in general. So yeah, there's just some discussion of that. And then the last thing that I want to do quickly is read you guys the synopses of the two different films or short films that she's made, just so that you know what we're talking about. Because obviously in this interview, we're talking a lot about the work she's done. So the first one, Blue Moon, which you guys can go and check out. It's on her production company's website, www.publicschoolpictures.com. And then you can like click on Blue Moon and watch it. It's a short film. It's really cute. And the description is, Blue Moon is a vibrant vignette of a love story that takes place in a single night. It follows two young women through Los Angeles as they explore the depths of themselves and one another. A beautiful portrait of how nurturing mutual vulnerability can turn into pure magic. Or as its poster says, if you believe in magic, once in a blue moon, you might just find it. So go watch that before or after the interview. And then the other project that we talk about is a short film that's currently being developed into a series, which is called 13th Stepping. And it follows Lily, a freshly sober actress who is played by Emily, with an insatiable appetite for escaping her unbearable reality. A provocative glimpse into an AA group in New York City wrapped up in a dark comedy drama. So 13th Stepping also, I realized I didn't ask this in the interview, but it was intentionally named that because it's a term that applies to when a more experienced member of an AA group or a 12-step group pursues a relationship with a newer group member. It doesn't have to be sexual, but it usually is. And it's seen as taking advantage of the younger or newer group member since they're considered to be vulnerable when they're in their early stages of recovery. And a lot of these programs also say that you shouldn't be entering into new like sexual or romantic relationships within the first year. So basically, with that name, you can guess what the series might develop into. Unfortunately, you can't currently watch the short film because it is on the festival circuit, but you can watch the trailer again at publicschoolpictures.com, and I'll let you guys know if anything, like any updates come of it anytime soon, so that all the listeners and little fuckers alike, they're the same people, can go and watch it. That's all from me today. Everybody raise the glass or your coffee or your water to Nina out there climbing Mount Kilimanjaro today. I almost said Everest, but it's Kilimanjaro. And raise glass for me just because I deserve it. And I'm out here doing this alone, like back in 2021. Shit's crazy. Okay, guys, enjoy the episode. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to finally have you here in person.
So excited to be here.
Hey guys, welcome to What the Fuck's Up podcast. I'm your host, Caitlin Kelly.
And I'm your other host, Nina Barnett.
She sounds better every time she says it. And today I'm joined by writer, producer, actress, and model, Emily Rule. Emily started modeling at 13 years old. She's been in some casual, you know, publications, including Teen Vogue, Marie Claire, and she's been the face of companies like Too Faced, KKW Beauty, and MAC. In 2021, she released Blue Moon, a short film about a magical one-night stand, which we have lots of questions about, that she wrote, directed, and produced. And more recently, she wrote, directed, and starred in her newest series, 13th Stepping, where she plays a freshly sober actress at her first AA meeting. Welcome, Emily. Thank you so much for coming on. It's so exciting to meet you in person.
I know, right? I feel like I already know you.
I know. One of my favorite ways to recruit people is to like literally like direct request them on Raya and be like, please come on my podcast.
Yeah, I didn't actually know that you could do that. I was thoroughly impressed.
I do it all the time. Like anyone who seems like a cool guest, I'm like, boom. Like
immediately.
Well, also for Raya, if anyone, I mean, I feel like I say this on every episode. I'm like, if you don't know, Raya's for celebrities, but also now any person because I'm
so, like, they let us in.
Yeah, we're on it. Yeah, we're all on it.
Yeah.
So is it for celebrities anymore? But
they have
like
investors now.
Right. Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. They've really expanded their horizons.
Entrepreneurs.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Here we go. But the people like dating wise on there are just like not quality I found. So I'm like, instead, I'm just going to use it as my networking app.
Yeah.
Like that's,
I mean, I think it's you text me back, which isn't like, you know, a common denominator between everybody that I meet on Raya.
Oh my God. Right. Yeah, literally. Yeah. I'm dead. Okay. Well, Emily, let's start out with talking about your journey because you got into modeling at such a young age. Mm-hmm. Like, what was that like? Was it ever intense or intimidating? Like, let's just hear from the beginning.
Okay, so I was 13, about to turn 14. Mm. And my dad and I actually really loved fashion. It was something that we enjoyed together. And so we went to Fashion Week together when I was 13, almost 14.
I'm so jealous.
For my birthday.
I'm like, Dad, what the
fuck? I was at like a baseball game at 13.
I literally had gotten my braces off maybe 10 days prior and had gone through puberty and kind of sprouted. And at Fashion Week is where I met my former mother agent. And a mother agent in modeling is a little bit like a manager. Gotcha. So they place you with other agents. You don't really book jobs through them specifically. I met her. And then I would say within like 2 weeks or so, I flew back to New York to do my first ever photo shoot.
Wow.
And then I won her like model search that I actually didn't really even know that existed. Or I had gotten turned down by an agency in Dallas a couple of weeks prior.
We didn't say she's originally from Dallas.
I am originally from Dallas.
Heck yeah.
Funny enough, years later, that same agency scouted me at a Starbucks with my brother and wanted to sign me, which was funny because they had rejected me when I was younger. But so I met my mother agent and then I signed a contract in Tokyo and went to Tokyo and did all of that.
That's so cool. How old were you?
I was 14 in Tokyo.
Oh my God.
And I was very, very young. And I remember only like really eating like peanut butter and like apples because I didn't really recognize anything else and I didn't really like know how to cook for mice. I knew how to use a microwave. Still to this day, I only really know how to use a microwave. So I was in middle school when I left. Mm-hmm. And then after Japan, I thought about like, do I want to go back to high school? Like, do I want to do the kind of normal thing? And I went back to high school and no one thought I was cool. Aww. No one. Yeah. All the kind of like sparkle that I had found elsewhere wasn't kind of back home, and I didn't feel like I could really relate to anybody. I also didn't get asked to homecoming, which I feel like was the final nail in the coffin.
Really, no, that's
it was the final
that's
nail
like
in
a
the coffin.
Wound.
It really is.
Yeah.
I actually have therapy later today. Maybe I'll
you
add it to
it.
The
like,
list.
You're like,
yeah,
actually, later.
You just unlocked something.
Yeah, we can like scooch daddy issues over. Let's like talk about homecoming. And so no one thought that's I was cool, and I was just kind of like, screw this. So I ended up going back to New York. And then never really looked back. Actually, funny enough, Jackie and I just had lunch and we saw like the former owner. Actually, I think he's still the owner of my former modeling agency.
Oh my gosh.
Which was an interesting small world thing.
So what was it like being that young and just being in Tokyo? Like, were you living with other models? Were you doing like schooling while you were, you know, going to shoots or anything like that? Because yeah. I know you have to like do that when you're on film sets.
Right. And stuff. I would do school at night. Kind of like what everybody's doing now, except it was a lot less kind of evolved 10 years ago or 12 years ago. At first it was my mom and I in an apartment, and then I moved into a hotel. I didn't really do the model's apartment thing because I was so young. I did the model's apartment thing later in life when I came to New York. It was a really intense schedule. It really ingrained quite the work ethic. I mean, you work every single day. I think I had a couple of days off, and you're either on set or you're in a van, and they take all the girls. I don't know if it's still like this, but this is how it was when I was there. Yeah. It was just a group of girls in a van going to castings, and it was highly competitive. Because you have a lot of these girls where like their income is supporting their families.
Yeah,
you're all competing so for the stressful. Same exact jobs. And you're all very young.
Yeah,
and all very like hungry, so everybody's highly irritable. Yeah. It was wild. I don't think I realized, you know, what I was processing because I was so young. Now looking back, I think I always knew that I wanted to get out of Texas, and so I jumped at the first opportunity.
Yeah.
And I think of my life in like two chapters, so my life before that and my life after that, because I truly think that that changed the course of my life for sure. And I had never left the country. And so it changed everything. I started thinking about myself as like a brand or an entity and who I wanted to be. It just gave me a sense of self that I didn't really have before. It traumatized me in so many other ways that I'm starting to unpack. But that was
in
almost
that
later.
Session.
Yeah, exactly. And then, so I didn't go to high school. Well, I did it online. I went for like a semester. And then I came back to New York and started modeling and was still doing high school at night. And then when I was 18, actually, I met this guy on Tinder in New York. So also most of my dating experience has been on apps because I didn't go to high school. So like I didn't have
the normal
experience. Like my first kiss was on set.
Wow.
And my first boyfriend, actually, I met on a plane to New York from Dallas. So most of my dating experience has been on apps. And I met this guy on Tinder because this was like the advent of Tinder, I think. This is pre-Raya.
Yeah. Way pre-Raya.
This was
pre-Raya.
When Tinder was the option.
This is when like Tinder was the option. And it was a fun game. And I met this guy. And he lived in between New York and LA. Mm-hmm. And I had a contract in LA with an LA agency. And generally, if you go out of town, those contracts are like 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. So you go somewhere for 6 weeks. And I thought, oh, now's the time to take it. Like, I'll know somebody. This will be fun. I'll go for the summer. I went and I just ended up staying, and now it's been like 8 years. Wow. And then funny enough, we became neighbors. It like lasted like a couple weeks after I got there. Nothing happened. But we became neighbors. We lived in the same building, and now he just married one of my best friend's good friends.
Oh my God.
So it all just like,
so this is when came you back. Officially went to LA.
This is when I officially came to LA, but there was no, it wasn't like planned. It was like happened. And I just stayed. And now I've continuously just stayed.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what was it like having like this kind of independence at such a young age? Like, do you feel like you grew up really quickly? Because like, I know, you know, growing up in New York City, like at times I'm like, wow, I saw things at such a young age. I'm like, it's actually crazy to think, like, you think you're adult,
right,
but you're fully a child.
I mean, I think there's definitely a part of me that has a little bit of like child star syndrome.
Yeah.
So like arrested development in some areas.
Mm.
I've actually realized recently that like I never had hobbies or like extracurricular activities.
Oh, yeah, that's so interesting.
Because my life was work. And even now.
And you were a brand from such a young age.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And even now I have a hard time not working. It actually brings me anxiety. Like I'm in New York and yesterday I didn't do anything because it was Mother's Day and I spent time with friends, but it actually hit my head. I was like, oh, should I be like doing something productive here?
Totally.
So I think there's that. I think like in dating, it also affected me just the way that I relate to other people. Mm-hmm. And I think that I grew up, so my mom's a businesswoman. She's a CEO. So from a very early age, I was around a business and I kind of grew up in her business. Mm-hmm. So I was spoken to like I was an adult. I was given a lot of independence. So I don't know if any of that really changed. I think that there is a very strong sense of like self-sufficiency that in relationships is it's interesting to try and kind of navigate, right? Mm-hmm. Because like I don't really need a man for anything else than emotional support, which sometimes is the hardest thing to get from anybody.
Yes, especially men.
Especially men.
I was gonna say, I was like, woo.
I think that it definitely affected the way that I relate to like my body and what I look like. Mm-hmm. And when you're the youngest at something and you kind of get praised for being the youngest at something, when you're not the youngest anymore,
it freaks
you feel
you
less
out.
Special.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then when you see that there's like a new crop of people, you start thinking like, have I phased out? Did I also peak? I think like before I found filmmaking, there was a part of me that was like, oh, did I peak at like 14? Mm. Like, is this as good as it's gonna get? Like, because I stopped modeling and started acting, and acting was not nearly as easy. A lot more rejection. I left something that I was consistently good at and consistently working for something that like was not consistent at all. And you start wondering, like, I wondered if I made the right decision, and I fully think that I did. I think that modeling had stopped fulfilling me creatively, and I had gotten tired of not really having a voice or a say. I think I had gotten tired of needing to fit into a certain size, or the whole measurement, you know, thing. Yeah, I think is not great for your mental health.
That just stresses me out from afar. You know, I mean, that's something my parents like wouldn't let me do when I was younger, and I still had, you know, my crop of eating issues. For
yeah, exactly. I'm like, I can't
but I can't imagine being like told to do that for your job.
I remember
insane,
like going through puberty and that being really stressful.
Yeah, I
remember like, you know, when you'd go in to get measured and just like the sheer stress. Or I'm also relatively short for a model. I'm like,
how tall are you?
5'7" on a good day, but I would like round up.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't get as 5'7", it was really difficult to get in anywhere. But I would put lifts inside of my socks. So that way when I took off my shoes, I wouldn't have to like do the whole where you lift up on your heels. I would already be a little bit taller when they would go to measure me. I remember getting a gym membership at like 14.
Yeah.
It was insane. I remember the first time I got like boobs and a butt, I was like, what are these things? It's actually only recently that I like started appreciating that about myself. Which is really great. And I think that, I mean, especially when I think about, because right now we're in the process of in negotiations for hiring a writer for Blue Moon and talking about like actress comps. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I want them to like look healthy. I think that there was this standard that was projected upon me at such a young age that I fully bought into, but that is so unhealthy and really not attainable unless you're on drugs.
Yeah.
Or chain smoking.
Yeah. Or just not eating healthy at all. Or
Yeah. And I think also realizing that, like, I think I always thought that, like, that was also what was attractive to the opposite sex. Mm-hmm. And I don't really think that that's the case.
Yeah. 100%.
I definitely don't think it. I think it's so funny. I have a bunch of guy friends. And I mean, they make fun of me for how often I ask. I'm like, are you sure you don't like the really, really tiny people?
Yeah.
And they're like, it's always yes, a no. I'm sure. But it's great. I mean, it really is crazy how, you know, so many movie stars and all these people, and it's not their fault by any means. But like in all the films that I watched growing up, I'd be like, oh, I don't look like that, but I guess that's okay. And it almost became that. The word healthy had like a bad connotation.
I remember when somebody said I looked healthy, I used to freak out.
Yeah. When my parents would say you look healthy, I was like, that's your code name for fat.
Yeah. Yep. So I'm like, isn't that insane? I'm like, the word healthy. Yeah. Like, how did we possibly
ruin that word? How did healthy become
bad?
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah. Also, I think it's so interesting what you said about like having a feeling or like a sense of arrested development and feeling like maybe you peaked too young, because I think, like, you know, being in my later 20s now, as someone who always, like, has been in a creative endeavor, it's something that's just so hard in any of these fields as a woman, is you always feel like your age is, like, you know, kind of sneaking up on you, and that it's something that's going to, like, rule you out, which then you think about, like, you know, some of the most well-regarded actresses right now who are, like, so much older and are really like peaking again, like
Nicole Kidman, Olivia Coleman.
Exactly.
Sarah Paulson is a boss,
like every day.
100%.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's super unrealistic, but something about the way these industries are like cultivated to really make women feel like I mean, it's every industry too, you know, it's like mm-hmm. makeup, clothing, whatever, but like really makes women feel like their age is like the enemy unless they're the youngest.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I think that, I mean, it's interesting. I also realized recently, so I just started a production company and we're producing these two projects, but then we also want to expand past those and produce content for other people. Mm-hmm. But I've been working a lot recently and I absolutely love it and it's my purpose and it's what's like feeds my soul. But I've realized that like I actually have less time in the day than a male kind of counterpart would because mm-hmm. of the amount of self-care that I have to do. Do you know what I mean? Like the sheer time that I spend getting my hair done or my nails done or shaving my legs or working out mm-hmm. or doing something like that. Like I actually just have less time in the day that they do. And I think actually maybe Hillary Clinton was talking about this, that like she spends an hour in hair and makeup when she was campaigning and her, you know, her competitor didn't have to do that.
That's so true.
And I found it really interesting. I actually think it might be a harder thing to do to be a successful woman because you balance more things.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think that you're given more responsibilities. Like even if I had an incredible partner and we split, you know, like the duties 50-50, me just being the mom, I would have more things to do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's so true.
Think that women just have to work a little bit harder.
Yeah.
In general. And actually make their time more efficient. That's a huge thing.
Agree. Yeah. And I think that's why women end up usually being the more organized, like, you know, counterparts. So, because I think it really is, you like have to.
You have to do that.
I mean, so true with all the self-care. I mean, I'm one of those people that I can, you know, drink the whole night and come home and I will do 12 steps of a skincare. Like it will happen no matter
not
what.
13th.
Not 13th. Actually 13th.
I had to make a bad joke about it. I'm sorry. Suddenly I'm a dad.
But it's funny because I'm like, oh, that I'm probably up an hour after when I like everybody else that got home at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. Or even, you know, events have started to happen again and my publicist will send them to me and I look at them and I'm like, oh, do I have the 2 hours it will take to get ready to go, like the time mm-hmm. to do this? Or I went to an Oscars party and it took 3 hours of hair and makeup and my day took 20 minutes,
and it's
I think I might have spent longer getting ready than I actually spent there
at the party.
That's so funny. But that's kind of
it's just the reality
because you're also right now we kind of like in the company we have a few things cooking, we have the projects, but then also I'm kind of a part of that and mm-hmm. I'm one of the products that we're selling in a sense mm-hmm. yeah. and there is that kind of public persona that's very different than who I am, but is a part of the exposure of the company, and so that is a factor in the day. And
so
how, let's talk about this quickly, like what was the kind of transition? We've talked a lot about the modeling, you know, that whole experience. What was the transition from the modeling into acting and then from acting into also production and writing? Yeah, and even owning the production company, because that's so impressive.
Thanks.
Yeah.
So modeling to acting happened accidentally. I had spent a lot of my childhood doing musical theater. Mm-hmm. I'd even gone to a musical theater summer camp.
Which one?
It's called Stage Door.
I went to Stage Door.
I feel like
everyone went to Stage Door.
And so I had that within me. And I had kind of started to feel like I wasn't being fulfilled by modeling. But I was working out with my old trainer and I wanted to get out of working out. So I was like, let's take a selfie. We took a selfie. Lo and behold, my now manager actually had gone to high school with him and saw that photo and was like, who is this girl? Does she act? And the answer was no, but I'd still like to meet with this person. And his name is Oren Siegel, who I love very much. And I met with Oren. Shout out to Oren. And I met with Oren and he signed me. And then not long after, I think I'd done less than a handful of auditions, I booked the first film I was in, which is called Newness by Drake DeRemus.
Mm-hmm. So what was your role in that?
My role, I played a girl who hooked up with Nicholas Holt.
Yes! We literally...
That was like one of our main questions. Wow, guys, that reaction.
We just blew the speakers.
And I remember...
Anyone just listening crashed their car.
I'm so sorry to everyone.
I've had the pleasure of making out with some really good-looking men.
Oh my God, we need to hear about it.
Do you want to know what this was like?
Yes, but first, for people listening... Okay, so Nicholas Holt was in Skins, which is like, for people who are younger listeners, it was like the OG Euphoria.
Yeah.
It was really cool. Yeah. And he was like the hot one. He's British. What was he in recently?
He's in The Great with Elle Fanning.
Yes. So he's been in a ton of stuff. But from my quick IMDb research, it seems like the film, you know, which was a Tribeca selection for Tribeca Film Festival, it was about this couple who decides to like have an open relationship. So you were one of the
I
girls.
Was one of the fun times.
Oh,
yeah,
love it.
I think funny enough, I mean, it was a very poignant movie about like
looks really
online
good
dating. Yeah, and yeah. And it's called Newness because it's like, can intimate relationships and monogamous relationships exist in a world of so much newness?
Mm-hmm. Which and is so actually the thing that they explored. So real. That's yeah, it's so like real. When there are always shiny new things out there, yeah. Or apps you can get. Like.
And funny enough, the sex scene in that film I used as a reference for the sex scene in Blue Moon.
Great reference.
So it all circles back, right? But that was really cool. I'd auditioned for a different part and got that one. And it was my first time on like a proper movie set. I was so pumped. It was like the first time in my life that I realized this is where I'm meant to be. Dream job. I remember there were two scenes that we had together, and one of them was like a first date in a bar on the East Side. And so they actually we did not meet each other until that very first moment on set.
Oh, that's cool that they did that.
So that way we'd have those feelings.
To actually have those first date jitters.
Exactly. Yeah. And something that happens to me when I get excited or nervous is I speed up when I talk. And so actually most of the dialogue in that movie is me just like rambling. I also like one of the things I loved about Drake was that he just let the camera keep going. So you just kind of improv past a certain point. Yeah, so really most cool. of my dialogue in that as well is just improv. I think I had like a couple lines that I kind of expanded outwards. I was like, this is my moment.
Which like, we all always
like,
do.
I'm going to win all of the
I've
awards.
I've had directors be like, okay, but like you can say that as if you're in a rush. I'm like,
right,
okay,
yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's not my movie.
And then I remember the makeout scene. I remember being like, can we just do one more take? Like, just one more.
You're like, it didn't feel right.
And then, like, each take I'd, like, dedicate to, like, hair and makeup. Or this one's for the styling department. Do you know what I mean? Because I think everybody was so jealous. But he was lovely. And I remember he wrote thank you notes to every cast member.
Wow. That's like class act shit. Yeah.
And I had a huge crush on him. And, but yeah, that was a great first experience. And that went to Sundance. And... I actually had a major like existential crisis at Sundance.
So it was Sundance, not Tribeca.
It was Sundance, yeah.
Sorry, guys.
No, it's okay. And at Sundance, at the time, I had been partying a lot in LA, and I had this big moment at Sundance where all of these dreams were coming true. Like all of a sudden, I had a stylist and a publicist, and I was doing the carpet, and I was at Sundance, and I was so miserable. And I realized that like these things were not going to make me happy, that I already needed to have like a baseline of happiness. So I started kind of getting soberish. And it's funny because the like the bathtub scene in 13 Stepping, I had my like mental breakdown / like spiritual awakening in a bathtub at the I think the St. Regis in Deer Valley. So that was the pinnacle moment in my life where I just decided to really get my life together. I think I had been running from a lot of things and using a lot of things to help me emotionally regulate that were not good for me. So that was super meaningful. And then I took like a couple of months off, which I was really terrified to do. Yeah. I went to a rehab in Tennessee for 2 days. I was not, rehab
just
was not for me.
Days?
Just 2 days.
I was like, that must be a good rehab facility.
Yeah, I was like, either no, you did not like it or they just cured
or we all
right
should go
on.
Right
I
now.
Remember, it's funny because it like all of these experiences are now what I'm using for the show.
Yeah.
But I just realized rehab was not for me. I was like, nothing made me want to like do drugs more than a rehab.
Wait, this is
and it was
so
all
funny,
girls, and I was like, at least you know, like make this co-ed. And it was in the middle of like Tennessee, where there were more churches than people, and they wanted to save me, and that was just not gonna happen. So I left, but
you're
it kind
like,
of it,
no, not for me.
Yes, y'all have fun, but like deuce. But it scared the like ever loving shit out of me really. And it kind of set me straight for a little while. And then I started like auditioning again. I did a couple of short films. And then COVID happened and crushed everything.
Yeah.
And I think during that time period, I had created this curriculum for myself. So I was taking private classes with my acting coach, whose name is Lena Jorgis, and Nancy Banks. And she's incredible. And I was reading books and I was watching films every day and I was still trying to just make myself a better actress. Mm-hmm. And then in January, I had been kind of dancing around doing a short film with one of my best friends and that I met in acting class, and she's wonderful. And trying to stick on like a concept, or I just knew I wanted to make something. There was something within me that wanted to make something. Yeah. And I liked this idea of exploring love within a night, because that has happened to me multiple times. And I think that it's just as meaningful as like the year long loves that we've had. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's, I talk about it like you just exist in this little snow globe with somebody. And I had an experience where I was sexually assaulted in January at a date. This was a time in LA when all the restaurants were closed. And so people would invite you over to their home and cook you dinner. And
I'm so sorry.
Oh, I appreciate that. That experience is what really pushed me into Blue Moon, because I think that that's how I coped with those feelings. Mm-hmm. And everything was okay. It led to something really beautiful. And is now something that I'm going to incorporate in the rest of season one of 13 Stepping. So it comes full circle. I actually called him after I left and I spoke to him, which is one of the hardest things I've ever really had to do.
Yeah.
And I was really proud of myself that I did that, because I feel like a lot of times we don't really tell people if they've hurt us, especially if it's that kind of power dynamic.
Yeah.
And I hadn't really planned on doing any of that. I actually hadn't really processed what had happened until the next morning, and I woke up and I had like bruises on my forearms. And so I went over to one of my best friend's houses and just kind of like wept on her shoulder, and she kind of held my hand and I had the strength to talk to this person. And, you know, I think that that was a much more efficient route than canceling him, mm-hmm. because I think it gave him perspective, and I think there was some sort of remorse.
Yeah.
It to me restored a lot of the power that I felt like I had lost during that experience.
Yeah.
Was really, really helpful. But then, so then Blue Moon came around, and this idea, and that almost made me want to explore it more. And
so also, just for people listening, well, first of all, thank you so much for sharing that, because I know it's hard. And I've had, you know, experts on to talk about before, and it's just a terrible traumatic thing. And I've had, you know, experiences that are kind of similar to it that I haven't totally talked about on the podcast, but I see where you're coming from. Also, for people listening, Blue Moon is about this like magical one night stand. Mm-hmm. So when you're saying it was kind of a coping mechanism, was it almost like you rewriting that night for it to be something kind of more beautiful?
Well, so after that experience has happened, I went on another date with somebody who is Mr. Blue Moon. And I felt something that I'd never really experienced before. So we had three dates that consecutively I combined into this one night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I actually waited to sleep. Like, after I slept with him, I then wrote the sex scene in Blue Moon. And so it was this huge artistic kind of compatibility that we had. I think that, like, Blue Moon was my way and, like, believing in love again and, like, believing in something really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I also had just had this incredible experience with someone else. I'm not someone who, like, hates all men. Like, I think that things are very people specific.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't, like, I never want somebody else's actions to then bleed on to anybody else. I don't think that that's fair. So, but I think that this was my way of, like, not falling into, like, negative or self-destructive means of emotionally regulating. Like, this is where I just put any sorrow, and I just focused all my energy on this.
Mm-hmm.
And because it became my whole life, and then it turned into something really beautiful. And so Blue Moon was just me being really inspired by meeting this guy, and then one of my best friends having recently dated women and expressing how she felt underrepresented, and thinking like, okay, let's make this two girls, like, let's use your experiences and my experiences, and let's create this beautiful thing. And then I think I found the thing for life that I'm going to do. Like, actually, I'm pretty positive that this is the thing for life that I want to do. And it's interesting. Like, I wrote it in maybe 10 days. That's wild, and then pre-production was like 3 weeks, and then we shot it, and then I edited it in 2 weeks. Like, it was remarkably fast, and quite a shit show. And I learned a lot. Every day I learned something new. And then when I was actually in New York editing it, and I don't do well sitting still, so I thought about, like, what is my next idea gonna be? And I had gone to an AA meeting with a good friend of mine a couple of years ago, and was just in awe of the honesty and then how everybody was connected. Like, I knew so many different people there and was 2 degrees of separation. And I, like, this could make a really great show.
Yeah.
But I didn't quite know how to do any of this yet. I actually have old notes of me trying to, like, figure out characters, and none of which ended up translating years later. But I started building out kind of the frame idea for that. And then over the course of like 6 months, really built out what's the short film script. Yeah. And then that turned into, okay, this is not just a short film. This is a series. And, oh, okay, this is not only a series, but this is like my series and my character is going to be the anchor character. And that was really huge. I also think that this was how I explained to my agents that I no longer wanted to audition for anything else. Mm-hmm. Being like, I'm writing something totally for myself. Get
that. Yeah, it's like, I mean, I talk about this on the podcast all the time, but just like, it's so hard when you're in a creative endeavor to have any sense of agency. So to like create your 1,000% own sense of agency and like be able to kind of control your own outcome in some sense, you know, by writing your own stuff. It's like, that's really what helps set you apart and like gets you ahead at the end.
I think so too. I realized that for all of my adolescence, at least my teenage years and up until, you know, now I'm in my mid 20s, that my career had been largely decided upon by like agents and casting directors, and God bless them. And I'm so grateful for everything they'd done for me. But I just got tired of waiting for somebody to pick me.
Exactly.
I mean, that's literally how I got into comedy, because I was like, I could either sit here and wait for an audition, or I can go and get on stage and make
and
people
do your
laugh
own thing. And, yeah. And I was like, at least if I fail now, it was my fault. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and I think there's so much freedom in that.
That's actually such a great quote. I like that.
Yeah,
at like least if too. I fail now, it's my
fault. Yeah. Thanks. And I never really had as big of an opportunity to act as I did in 13 Stepping, at least if we just talk like about screen time. And I actually didn't know if I could do it. I still am learning everything day by day, but I didn't know if I could like act and direct and produce like all in a single day, because this was a really intense
role.
You
only shot in one day?
We shot in 3 days.
Okay.
I was like holy
yeah, no, we shot technically four, because we did a pickup in LA. But like, I didn't, the first day was the monologue scene, which we shot all in one take. We ended up editing it and then throwing in some inserts. But that was kind of like my personal Super Bowl, because I didn't know if I could direct and also be in that place emotionally to be able to like switch on and off. I don't know how healthy it is to do this, but it's incredible if you can. But like, you know, in the mornings I'd be in hair and makeup, and we'd be on set, and I'd be running the set and making sure people were getting in hair and makeup and that wardrobe was getting done and all these things. And then I'd have a couple minutes with my acting coach, and I'd have a breakdown, and I'd smoke a fake cigarette out front, and I'd come back in, and I would have these like emotional breaks. And I remember acting, and when you're in that flow state, I'm not a very religious person, but it's the closest that I've ever like felt
yeah,
to
flow
God.
States are, yeah, definitely.
And it's an out of body experience, and especially the last take that we did. And I remember, I fully believe that this happened. If this did not happen, I'm going to stick with it. I believe that this happened, but like everybody stood up and applauded for me, and then the village came out, which is like the the studio. Acting coach, everybody, everybody on set, and it was one of the greatest moments of my life, because I had done something that I didn't know if I could do. I had turned a hell of a lot of pain into something really beautiful. And I was no longer ashamed about any of the things that I'd experienced. And I fully think that like that's what healing is, is talking about these things. Because I never, ever, ever imagined that I would ever openly talk about any of those things. And I always thought that like, oh, you know, people were going to judge me, or I was, I didn't want people to feel sorry for me either. But I actually think that it makes us more human, and that we all have relatable stories. And that's one of the things that I learned from, you know, going to AA meetings. I went to probably like 80 in preparation for this script. And I got to cast a lot of my friends. Actually, Mr. Blue Moon is also in 13 Stepping, and he now does all of my graphic design. So that's,
oh my gosh,
he friend zoned me after the third date. and which is fine, because I got a movie out of it. And now we're friends, and he's doing all the graphic design for 13 Stepping, and was also in it. So
amazing.
Wait, was he the hot one?
Which hot one?
The one you hooked up with?
No, not that one.
I was saying, because he's very attractive.
Who was he? We'll talk about it after. Yeah. Guys, this is for off air. But okay, wait, I love all of that so much. And yeah, I Totally.
I love
agree.
That witch hot one. Sorry, I just. I, yeah, witch hot. I'm like, that is exactly. Like, if I ever produce a movie, question. Everyone will
this
be
is
so
the perks,
hot.
By the way, of casting yeah. your own movie and deciding who like, you want to have a sex scene
you,
with. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's a
so
good
funny.
Sex scene. Yeah.
Also, I love Mr. Blue Moon. Just like that, you know, that alias. Because, yeah. you know, we've talked about a lot in pop culture how, like, every guy has, you know, their nickname.
Some sort of nickname.
Yeah.
Oh.
And that's a yeah. good guy nickname. Oh. Oh, yeah.
That one.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Who's okay. a very talented hot. Person hot. In real life.
I fully thought they were the same person. I'm so dumb.
No, you would recognize. The other one's got, like, a
yeah,
lighter hair.
Yeah, totally different looking. Now I'm realizing that. I think
one
I just
of them
was
is
like,
Shawn
there's
Mendes.
One.
Yeah. One of them looks like Shawn Mendes. Yeah. Yeah. And one yeah. of them looks like your dream firefighter.
Yes, exactly.
He actually was that's a actually firefighter so in real life. Yeah, now we're, like, best friends.
Oh, my God. That's,
does that mean you're fucking? Like, no. What is that? I was like,
actually, no, we never did. We never did, which is why I think the chemistry on set was as good as it was.
You're like,
and, like, in between takes, we were, like, talking dirty to each other, and our mics were still on, which I didn't actually realize until after the fact.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That was so a funny. Shooting a sex, directing a sex scene that you're also in.
Yeah, that's.
I would be panting.
Really
I'd be like, okay, can we reset everybody? Like, let's. And I'm, like, fully topless.
It's going to be me in real life. I'm yeah. like, can we reset, please?
Yeah, and
yeah
I was, like,
literally, like, in the bedroom, I'm like, the lighting's actually a little off.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting because, like, the sex scene was probably the scene that, like, I thought about the most. Because it was the most choreographed thing mm-hmm. that we did. Yeah. Because it was actually all one take.
I feel like for people who don't act, I mean, I guess some people have heard this from, like, interviews and stuff, yeah. but, like, sex scenes are, like, the least, like,
sexy.
Natural, sexy yeah. thing ever. Like, you have to choreograph it. Like, people have
1,000%
intimacy directors on set.
Oh, and then we
set.
Forgot that, like, in the sex scene, actually, Lena, our wonderful acting coach, also that, like, I have my cinematographer watching this, my producer, like, it was a relatively closed monitor, but, like, people saw, and now everybody's going to see it, and, like, I've gotten over that, but, like, we realized towards a couple of the last takes, and this is the take when, like, we're both kind of shirtless on top of the counter, that, like, there was no motion of him, like, sticking it in, and that, like, oh. that has to happen, like, for continuity, that, like, no one is that talented. And so we had to specifically, like, shoot that. Also, he's, like, 6'7" in real life, so I was on
oh
an apple
gosh.
Box.
Wow.
But the whole scene itself, like, it was...
If you want to send him my number. Sorry, I just got a little flustered.
Woof,
woof. He was really great. It was also really important to me that whoever played that role that I felt really safe with.
Yeah.
And especially, you know, I haven't fully written out the rest of the season, but I have a very clear ideas of what's going to happen, and their relationship is going to be super important. And so whoever I casted in that, I wanted to just feel really comfortable with. And so he and I developed a really incredible friendship leading up to shooting that. So I felt very comfortable and very safe. But yeah, shooting that, because we come into the apartment and then we, like, make out and then we go to a wall and then he pushes me. It was like a game of bumper cars. Like, I had so many bruises afterwards after being, like, pushed up against the counter and this yeah. and that. And then actually after the credits, I don't know if you saw, there's a blooper.
Yeah.
And I did kind of hurt myself, but I couldn't, like, acknowledge the fact that I hurt myself because, yeah. like, we would be screwed. So I just, like, kept moving forward. The blooper is that, like, we do this spin around a corner and then he pushes me up against the wall.
Yeah.
And when we were doing that, they were like, just trust him, like, just fall into him, let him lead you. And the first time I do that, we trip and I, like, fall on my head and land backwards. And I was like, yeah, never trusting
again.
I was like, way to nail in my trust issues.
The bottom line is don't trust anyone.
Don't trust anything.
Okay, so this is amazing, but for timing, we're gonna have to move into yeah. our quarter life section, which is quarter life qualms. So we might get a little dark again, but we don't have to because you've already shared a ton with us. Mm-hmm. But the first question, I guess, interpret it how you will, you know,
yeah.
Is what is a pivotal experience that you went through in your 20s and how has it informed the person you are today?
I think when I was 20... This is just the first thing that comes up.
Yeah. But after.
When I was 20, I was living in an apartment building in West Hollywood. And I had fallen in love with my neighbor, who lived a floor beneath me.
This wasn't the one you mentioned.
This is
the
a different
plane.
One. Same building, different one. I'm actually thinking about writing another show about this building, yeah. Like Melrose Place meets like the White Lotus. Because there were so many. Amazing. My best friend at the time was sleeping with somebody else on a different floor. It was quite a revolving door. Yeah. But I had fallen in love with this guy. I remember the day I moved in, I was out front smoking a cigarette and he like pulls up in his car. And so I run into the elevator and ask him out.
I iconic. Love that.
And yeah, I think I was just about 20. Yeah. Wow. He was older than me and he worked in art. And I just thought he was the coolest person I'd ever met. At this point in time, I had one friend in LA. I wasn't that close with my family. So he kind of became everything to me. Mm-hmm. His family would stay in my apartment when I was gone. He became my best friend. I fell madly in love with him and he didn't love me. And it was really, really difficult. And it was the largest amount of heartbreak and pain I've ever experienced. I remember telling him that I loved him and him not responding and telling me if he loved me, he would be with me and that he wasn't with me. And this went on for like a year. And I just was so wrapped up in him. And then we had gone to Palm Springs together. And I remember getting so upset with him because he wouldn't sleep with me. And then... the next weekend, I found out that he had taken another girl to the same hotel who became his girlfriend. I don't know if they ended up getting married or not. Oh my and then God. Because we lived in the same building, I got to see him and his new girlfriend all the time and know that he was a floor beneath me. And I didn't know how to cope with those feelings.
Like directly below? Like,
yes,
could you, like,
one floor. Stop, yeah.
You know? So were you like a virgin at the time? Is that why he wouldn't sleep with you?
No, I think I don't actually know why. He always said he didn't want to like... complicate things, but then we kind of would, but then we'd stop. It was very confusing. Yeah. I think he told me I was his soulmate. There was God. Lots of mixed signals, and I think he should have known better.
Yeah,
because mm-hmm. I was very young, and I didn't realize that you couldn't love anybody more than you love yourself. Mm. That was that lesson, and I think that the highs and lows that I felt. Granted, I was doing a lot of substances, so that also, you know, affected that. I've yet to ever experience such highs and lows, which I think is very, very healthy. But I was fully madly in love with him, and I thought he was the one. And when that was over, I really didn't know how to handle it. I remember my mom coming to, like, console me, and I'd just be crying. She'd be like, it's going to get better. I'd be like, I don't care. Like, I just want him.
So it was super codependent.
It was super codependent. Yeah. We were best friends. We spent every day together. We did everything together. And here's this person, like, telling me that I'm their soulmate. And I really had no experience in relationships. My parents' relationship was not really an example of one for me to follow. I had all these ideas about like what romance was from TV and films. And I just thought like, oh, this crazy feeling that you feel with somebody you only feel once and you're never going to feel that again. And now I'm a firm believer that we have multiple soulmates mm-hmm. at different points in our lives.
I agree.
And I actually don't know if he was my soulmate. I really don't think he was. I think he just had everything that I thought was attractive. Yeah. I remember letting him borrow my car because his was in the shop and he needed to go to Malibu. And I was with one of my best friends at the time. And we were going shopping and she was like, I think that's your car. And I was like, no way. Like, we're in Beverly Hills. He's in Malibu. She goes, no, I think that's yours. She runs a red light and we pull up and he'd taken a girl on a date in my car.
Oh my God.
After he'd known how I felt about him. And I remember absolutely losing my shit. I think I probably called him 45 times and told him I was going to file like a police report if he didn't return my car. I was like, that was all a blur and somehow he like, you know, wiggled his way back in. But I had not really developed a sense of like self-love yet. Like mm-hmm. I was very, very young.
And also, yeah, at 20. I mean, that's so tough. And also like having that kind of meet cute of the, you know, in the running building. In the elevator and all
and
that.
I was like, he understood me so well. And like, how am I ever going to find someone else? And I didn't know. And so I think going through something like that, which now... You know, the opening scene in 13 Stepping on the Roof, that some iteration of that happened to me on the balcony of my building in West Hollywood where it was like 5 a.m. and I had stayed up the whole night crying about this person and my friend had to come get me. Yeah. So now it's turned into an art form for me. And I believe he's married and I am certain that he like texted me like a booty call like 6 months ago.
Cheers. Okay. He's doing well.
Yeah. He's doing well.
Sounds like you.
Looks like you
didn't
end up.
I won that
yeah.
One.
Yeah, you exactly. Definitely for sure.
But the lesson for that is that never love anybody more than you love yourself.
Yes, I love that.
I love that.
So the next question is, what is one of your favorite parts of being in your 20s?
I feel like I'm a little bit wiser. And I feel like when it comes to what I want in friendships or relationships, it's much clearer to me. I feel like now I've found my passion in life. And I feel like now I have more perspective and I'm less influenced by other people's opinions and have a clearer understanding of my own.
Yeah, I really like that answer.
Thanks.
And then since we've talked about like some of the difficult periods you've been through, if you are having like a difficult time or, you know, hitting one of those lows, what is something you go to for yourself to kind of like recenter?
I think there's a few things. Like, I think there's meditation, obviously, but sometimes that's the last thing you want to do. Mm-hmm, like when people are like, oh, just meditate, you're kind of like, oh.
Like, I will drive myself crazy. But
yeah,
okay.
Exactly. I have an incredible therapist who's been really, really helpful and amazing. I also have really great friends who I call. I actually really love going out on my balcony, which is another parallel to the roof, because I feel like I live on the 23rd floor of a building in LA, and it gives me a sense of perspective and it makes me feel small and it makes my problems seem small.
I think
television and film has also been an outlet for me, hence why now I'm doing it. And I think having some sort of a gratitude practice or counting the things that did go right that day is really helpful. And just remembering that, like, everything is meaningful, but not everything is important.
Yeah, I like that. All right. I can't believe our time is coming to a close, basically, but we're going to finish up by playing a game with you called the 7T questions.
Okay.
The 7T questions is just rapid fire questions about seven random things. It's inspired by Vogue's 73 questions, but Beautiful. We can do all 73. So okay. Here we are. First question is, what is the current tea in your life?
Well, wow. Okay. Where do we begin?
Emily's like, there's always so much tea, so we could make this.
There's so much going on. Well, I got dumped recently. No. So there's that.
Oh. Wait, when?
Like a month ago.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay. So we,
you know, I went through a breakup.
I've gone through. Yeah, I also went through a breakup like 6 months ago. So they're just like piling on at this point.
We're just going through a breakup season.
It's fine. They've
you know,
all
more
been,
inspiration for
I'm
more
I'm the
series.
Taylor Swift of independent filmmaking. Yeah. He will make his way into some story. So I've like recently started the swiping game. So I'm like dating-ish. Yeah. So there's all of that. I'm like in the process of like pitch, like making the show and working on the pitch deck, and I just figured out the season finale, which I'll tell you guys after. Wow. That's super exciting. Yay.
Yeah, we have to talk about that like at the end, or we can say it now, but like, are people gonna be able to like watch
it? So what we're doing right now, so what you saw is a proof of concept. That's also a short film, so that's going to be submitted, or it is currently being submitted to festivals. We just were official selection of the Swedish International Film Festival.
Oh my gosh.
I wonder why they liked you.
So that's so
she's
fun.
Very blonde.
Yeah, I know. Oh, my cousins. Thanks, guys. Shout out.
Her fam.
Thanks, fam. And so there's that. There's a proof of concept. And then what I'm working on right now with Mr. Blue Moon and the rest of my crew is the pitch deck, which is like a 40-page deck of everything to do with the show, from the locations to the characters to the plot points of season one to a little bit of everything. And then after that, I'm going to hire someone to co-write the pilot and the treatment for the series with me. And then we start going to networks and we start selling this baby.
That's great.
I really
the production
I'm wishing you guys the best.
Oh,
I know
that's
like
it's very
so
exciting. So I've been thinking just a lot about like what the show is going to be and the overall kind of plot lines. So that's it right now.
Okay, so we know that you love music and you have great music and everything that you've produced. And so what's a song that you think captures you or your vibe?
Well, my Raya song used to be American Woman by Lenny Kravitz.
I love that song.
And I feel like I'm going to go with that one.
I love that.
That's a great answer. Yes. American Woman.
Yeah.
Do I sound like Lenny? American Woman.
Right.
Stay away from me.
This is absolutely gonna keep going. That's going to be the video we use right, for that the promo.
I'm a singer. I actually do sing, but that's why I feel the need to make myself sound really bad.
Really bad.
When that I'm like, I do the same thing. Because I'm like, I'm not going to like sound okay because then people are going to think I'm trying. Right. So I'm going to actively try to sound horrible.
That's what I do. Right. Karaoke nights are the worst for me. People are like, let's go sing karaoke. And I'm like,
oh,
no,
I love karaoke. Well,
karaoke, then I actually try hard. Yeah, I know. And then it's like embarrassing. Yeah, I actually try.
I know,
and
that's
then,
my
and
thing.
Then like, and then I'm like, yes, guys, I'm like, get back on the beat. Like, it's actually, yeah, I'm the worst. Don't go karaoke with me. Okay, what is something you get Sunday scaries about?
I think that for me, because we are the little engines that could, and we're pushing everything up the hill ourselves, I think that just things don't happen as quickly as I would like them to, because you have lawyers involved, you're working in a creative field. Like, realistically, I can't spend 8 hours pouring out creative content because I just don't have that in me. So I think, to me, I just wish that there were more hours in the day, that I could do more things, and that I'm not getting everything done as quickly as I would like to, which is just my own internal fear that I have to release. But it also propels me in some way, so I'm trying to find a balance from that. But I think just not getting everything accomplished that we want to get accomplished in that week, because a lot of it's out of our control.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, so the next question is, what is the smallest hill you're willing to die on?
Well, a specific one for 13 stepping that I actually just talked to Zach Parker, our head of development at the company. And in the meeting scene in 13 stepping, we have black chairs. And there are black chairs on along the walls. And there were actually blue chairs to begin with that just were in that room. And I was like, I don't want blue chairs. Like, I refuse to have blue chairs because the aesthetic is so important to me. And I wanted 50 black chairs, even though we only needed 13 of them, or 15, because we have two extra spots. And it was an argument with my producer, who was great. And it was his job to kind of keep me in budget, which is a very difficult thing to do. And I fought on the black chairs. And then I fought even on, like, there was a pamphlet holder on the table where my character picks up a cookie, and that pamphlet holder was actually blue in real life, but then I paid a VFX artist to paint it black because blue is not in the color scheme. So
you're like, it's not on the color board.
I was like,
it's
horrified when I saw it in frame. So I'm a stickler for just like aesthetic, and I'll die on any hill that has to do with that.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. Who is someone that's currently inspiring you?
I mean, I think Olivia Wilde is one of the first people that comes to mind because she's also a mom.
She's doing what you're doing.
She's doing what I'm doing and she's a mom. And that's where I want to see my life in the next 10 years. And I think that I've always wondered how you balance something like that. And I feel like she's doing it. Also, Pink has a really incredible documentary. I believe it's on Amazon. And the way that she parents and the mother that she is and how she's integrated her life is a really big inspiration to me. So those two ladies.
I
love
that. Yeah, I've heard amazing things about the Pink documentary. I need to see it. I'm like such a documentary buff. I'm surprised I haven't seen it yet.
I hadn't been exposed to Pink that much. And after watching that, I was a huge fan.
Wow. I mean, she was my childhood, but recent Pink, I know a little less about.
Yeah, I would say the same.
Back in the day, she was it.
She was the idol. Okay, next question is, who either historically or now is your celebrity crush?
And have you hooked up with them?
There's a few different ones. There's like Tom Hardy, and there's like David Beckham. And there's, you know, as of recently, like Jeremy Strong of Succession, I've like had this thing for. Because I think he's just so talented that it like gets me every time. I think Nicholas could probably be up there.
He's definitely on mine.
Yeah.
Anyone with an accent, I suddenly don't see straight.
1,000%. Any English actor.
That's my last relationship. Cheers.
Any kind of like English actor, I'm
attracted to.
Or like Zac Efron in like 2006, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God. Like before you realized how short he was.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I remember like I shot Teen Vogue. When I was like 15, about to turn 16, and it was the prom theme, and I didn't go to prom, so this was very fun for me. And I got to wear like a Gucci flapper dress, and I did the editorial with Josh Hutcherson of The Hunger Games. And at the time, that was when those films were coming out. And I was like, there was some magic. Josh, if you're listening to this, I think that there was some magic.
I think
magic.
He's married now, but
is he married?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I was gonna say, I have no idea, but I hope
I think
it happens.
He is.
Unless he's married. I'm not a homewrecker.
If he's married, leave.
If he's married, leave. 15-year-old me, like, thought that we had a connection. And I even did the point that I asked my agents to call your agents. And I shot the Teen Vogue photo shoot with him. And, like, his mom was there and he was very sweet. And it was just, like, it was one of my first, like, boy interactions. Yeah. And, like, he was my crush for a little while.
Oh, I love he that. Just... like his on-screen personality, I mean, I can't speak to him in real life, but it's just so charming.
Oh,
and, like,
my god,
genuine, like, he's not, and like,
yeah, he's, it's not that he's like necessarily like super attractive, it's just like his like aura, like, mm-hmm. I feel like how genuine and like lovely he is, like, yeah. he feels cute. Like the not too nice guy, yeah, he's, yes. like yes. genuinely non-toxic,
yes.
you know,
yes.
Also, he was in, what is it called?
Bridge to Terabithia.
Journey to the Center of the Earth, RV.
I know his co-star in that, but no, it's not about that. But no, he was in Little Manhattan, which was filmed on my block. And the co-star in that went to school with me. She's really fucking cool. But that, like, defined my childhood, too, because it was, like, filmed on my block. And they were, like, these young kids having their, like, 14-year-old relationship on their, like, Razor scooters. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is so fucking cute. So, basically, you lived my childhood dream. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then for the last question, do you want to take it away?
Yeah. What is something that you can tell us that people would not otherwise know about you?
Before I started modeling when I was 13, I almost joined the Junior Olympic Riflery team, and I was really into skeet shooting and hunting and fishing and all of the things. I'm from Texas. My father was very much into all of those things.
From North Carolina.
There you go. Yeah. And so I almost did that. My life would be very different. I decided to model because I thought it was a bit cooler.
You're modeling or skeet?
Yeah, exactly.
Skate or?
Yeah. Wait, so that's
hilarious. I also love how quickly really you answered cool. that. You were immediately
you
like,
knew.
I kind of know the answer to this. Yeah. I also hate cucumbers, which is a weird thing, apparently. Oh, like, not
Thank
very many
God
people.
Thank God we didn't give her cucumber water.
Actually,
right?
I can stomach that, but yeah. it's just
I'm, like,
kind of
weirdly the same way. Like, cucumbers and I just
I love snacking on them. I don't do pickles, though. Pickles are,
see,
like,
I'll do a pickle.
I have, like, a strong reaction to pickle smell. But cucumbers, it's like, I'm like, I'm eating water.
Yeah.
It's two for one.
Two for one. Getting hydrated.
So we all have our ick foods. Yeah. Wait, I love that. I feel like that's one of my favorite things.
Like, I know, yeah, I agree.
That
I mean,
I've
that's
heard
like
so far on the podcast.
That's such a. I mean, I totally get because I'm from North Carolina, and I mean, my sweet 16 was at a shooting range, and it was so fun because it was a bunch of girls like really that had really never shot. You know, yeah. like I didn't know what I was doing by any
Your
means.
Your sweet 16. Oh yeah. my god, that's
my sweet 16 was at a Japanese restaurant called Morimoto that used to be in the meatpacking district, and it was. Gosh. My mom and then like my agents and that was my sweet 16, and then I didn't have a cake, they just gave me fruit, and that was my sweet 16.
That is so toxic.
Oh my gosh, my heart just shattered.
I feel like I just told
pieces.
The story to somebody and I didn't realize that, like, oh wow,
you're like, you didn't
bad.
Have fruit with a candle in it?
No.
Oh,
this was
gosh.
My sweet 16
mean
yeah
it.
Oh, guys, it's okay. She's here now.
Yeah,
we're going to make sure she
now.
Eats lunch. But thank you so much, Emily, for coming on. This was so cool to hear about everything you're doing. And I just love that you're kind of like taking life by the horns and like doing the writing and the production, all of it.
Thanks.
And I'm excited to see all of it grow and expand. Where can the listeners find you, follow you, see your stuff?
So I'm at Emily RUHL on Instagram. Blue Moon is now on Vimeo. So you can just, it's under Public School Pictures, Vimeo account. Public School Pictures is my production company. It's also at Public School Pictures on Instagram, publicschoolpictures.com. Yeah, that's me.
Great.
That's it. Yay.
Thanks so much for coming
on. Oh my god, thanks for having me.
And you can follow me at CKNY1213.
And you can follow me at Nina Barnett on Instagram.
And then follow the podcast, of course, at WTF Sup Pod, and rate, review, subscribe, tell a friend, tell your mom, tell your dad, tell your dog. Okay. Thanks, guys. Bye.